Doom, 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 doom. Boom, 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 boom. Doodly ding, bum, ba, 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 doo, boom, bum, ba, ding, 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 ding. That's the theme of morning coffee notes. Doom, 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 ba, doom, boom. Hey, everybody. It's Dave Weiner here, February 18th, 2005, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. This is your Southern boy, your reporter. I've got so much to talk about. So much to talk about. Let's start out with Google. Google. We're going to talk to... Today's a travel day, by the way. I'm in Atlanta, and I'm headed south today. I'm going towards a town called Waycross, Georgia. Why Waycross? Well, I've been there before. I was there when I was like 8 years old with my grandparents, Rudy Kiesler and Lucy Kiesler. And 8 years, that would be like 1963. Flew on an airplane. I think that was the first time I ever flew on an airplane. And it made quite an impression. I mean, I remember lots of little details about that plane ride. And, you know, there aren't many things from age eight that I remember. One of them is that they gave us these little packs of Winston cigarettes. There were like four cigarettes per pack, and there was one on every seat, basically, when you came and sat down. They also, I think, had playing cards, and even the seat of a kid got the cigarettes. Of course, they didn't let you smoke them. I don't think there was a non-smoking section on the airplanes. I think basically everybody just, you know, you got on a plane and you lit up. My grandparents didn't smoke, though. They were non-smokers. Speaking of which, it's been 980 days since I had a cigarette. So it's like, well, you need 20 days. It's going to be 1,000 days. And I mentioned that to somebody, and they said, well, you know, isn't that depressing? Here it is, almost 1,000 days, and this guy's still counting. And I said, no, asshole, that's not true. I am a software guy, and I wrote a script. And so all I have to do is choose a menu command, and it tells me how many days it's been since I smoked. It's actually a very small script. At one point, I had that in the template for scripting news so that every time I rebuilt the page, it would sort of like, it would say, well, you know, it's been X numbers of days since I smoked. And you know, I got tired of seeing that after a while. But 1,000 days is 1,000 days, you know. I remember when it was 10 days, and oh, man, it's been 10 days. And, you know, before that, if you had said, it was hard for me to go with an hour without smoking when I was a smoker. But and now the truth can be told. Who was I talking about this with? One of the secrets, well, there's this incredible antidepressant drug called Wellbutrin. And for about half the people who take it, it immediately knocks out the desire for smoking. And I don't think they know why, but it does. And you can get it on most insurance plans if you can get your doctor to prescribe it. And chances are 50-50 if you're a smoker that it will really, really help you quit smoking. And I was in the group that it does help. You know, can't recommend it more highly. Plus, it also makes you feel good, which is kind of nice, too. You know, I'm of the school that if it makes you feel good and it doesn't hurt you, then, geez, why not, you know? I mean, it's like you only get so much time to live. And, you know, why not be happy when you're, you know, in that time? Anyway, just my feeling. I mean, some people feel like, you know, they don't want their personality to be changed or fucked with or whatever, but there are so many things that do that anyway. I mean, you know, I don't even want to tell you about my dreams. They're so disturbing. Obviously, there's something strange going on in there. Anyway, it wouldn't be morning coffee notes without, like, some coffee, and it is the morning. It's not even light out yet. It's right now 6:36 a.m. Got cold, but it was actually a really nice day yesterday. It was bright, sunny. And as I said on Scripting News, this is the stop that I can't tell you about what I'm doing here, or what I did. It's now in the past. It was very, very interesting and, I think, very successful. one day spent yesterday, and learned a lot, and I expect to learn a lot more. And it's one of those things where, you know, that right now, you know, explain. I've written about this, but I've never actually been blogging while something like this was going on. In, I guess it was like the summer of 1994. Yeah, I guess that's right. Yeah, summer of 1994, which was, of course, over 10 years ago. I had decided to, you know, leave Userland. That was the first time I left Userland. But I really was leaving it for good. And the reason why was it just totally wasn't working. It was, that was the incarnation of Userland as a Macintosh software developer. And, you know, I really tried to not compete with Apple. You know, they had offered, you know, go this way and you won't compete with us. But when we went there, we were somehow, we were still competing with them. And so by the end of 93, I just like gave up. I met with the board of directors of the company and I said, they tried to, you know, convince me not to do it, but I, you know, I just, nope, I'm not doing this anymore. And it turns out that I actually lived up to that promise, and you know, spent perfectly miserable 2 or 3 months just sort of moping around and not knowing what to do or whatever. And finally, you know, I got tired of doing that. And started off in a couple of different directions. One of them was, you know, meditation, massage therapy, shiatsu, you know, like great stuff. And that was one thread. And the other thread was I started going places and talking to people that I knew from the software industry and visiting companies and basically just, you know, finding out what they're doing. And at that time, as today, basically, when I go somewhere, generally people are willing to tell me what they're doing. And so I had done that with Microsoft. I had done that to some extent with IBM. I certainly had been, knew, was very familiar with what Apple was doing, Motorola, I'm trying to think some of the others. There were just a lot. Santa Cruz operation, that was probably Stanford University, Santa Cruz operation, the Palo Alto Times. Those three were like really big influencers because this was the original Santa Cruz operation, not the one that's suing everybody these days. There I learned about the web and the protocols of the internet and sort of how thin they were and how easy. And that was like an eye opener. And so I when I'm in between things, like now, you know, I was trying to do a particular kind of thing in when I was in Seattle, and it didn't work out. Again, it was one of these things, unfortunately, that it, and I can't really talk about it because, you know, if I were to talk about it, then like nobody would ever talk to me in confidence again, and that's not cool. So, excuse me, I have a lingering like chest cold thing going on. Anyway, where was I? Right. So, and so that sort of didn't work out, and I did the BloggerCon in November, and then the podcasting thing like totally didn't work out. I mean, basically. Well, you know, you'll probably hear more about that, but, you know, it's basically there I'm going to sort of, like, wait and see what happens with all the commercialism that's being thrown at podcasting and, like, frankly, all the greed that's being thrown at it. I still hope that it remains, like, largely amateur and largely people communicating their own ideas and not, like, so much about selling tires and trips to Hawaii and, you know, whatever, you know, the kinds of shoes and, you know, recording artists, your latest recording artist, get it now while it's, you know, come on, you know, I mean, I like the podcasts that are like soliloquies. Remember the guy who said that? It was like Scott Rafer from Feedster. He was kind of being a dork and, and said, "Hey, you know, those guys are doing soliloquies." "Yeah, that's what I'm doing." "Fuck you." "You don't like it? You know, whatever." "Sorry." That's the, you know, of course. See, in podcasting, we don't worry about the sound bites. You know, go ahead. You know, I know. Believe me, I get it. I ain't running for office because you got that FU thing going on right there. But anyway, small town blogging is very cool. That's something I want to talk about. I want to talk with you about Google and smart tags, although I don't think they call it smart tags. Later today, I'm going to talk with people from Google PR, not Cindy McCaffrey because she's not there anymore, but some other people. I'd like this not to be a crisis. But we need to have a line here. For background, smart tags. And by the way, my net connection here sucks so bad that I have not been able to download the software that, you know, with problems with smart tags. I haven't been able to review the software. The new Google toolbar. I've only been able to go on based on what other people have said it does, and therefore, you know, take my comments here with a complete huge grain of salt. This may only apply to Microsoft's smart tags, and I've seen Dare Obasanjo had a comment about it, and it, you know, I wasn't clear what he was saying exactly, but it sounded like the usual Microsoft sort of like complaint is that they think the reason that I didn't like smart tags is because I have it in for Microsoft. You know, that's sort of how Microsoft dismisses a lot of the criticism, or has at least in the past. They've been a lot better at absorbing and doing stuff with criticism. They've always been pretty good at that. But on the other hand, they've also always had sort of this real thick skin, almost armor plating, that kept like criticism from penetrating. It was sort of this weird duality. Companies should accept criticism. They should, and take it to heart. They shouldn't like have to put up with abuse, but criticism's good stuff. You know, when people tell you how you look to them and you're a business, that's data that you want to have. And, you know, maybe you want to take it to heart that, I just had a chance to say this to a clerk at my hotel the other day. You know, the customer is sometimes right. Even if the people won't say the customer is always right, you know, how about like sometimes? How about like, I'm not wrong about everything, am I? Believe me, there are a lot of people who deal with customers who think that the customer is always wrong. But, and you know, you like to think those people don't stay in business very long, but and sometimes they have a monopoly. Because the other guys, their competitors, sort of like do the same thing. Anyway, the problem with smart tags was, and the reason why they had to go, and it only had anything to do with Microsoft's personality to the extent that they really believed what they were saying about it. That, hey, you know, it's just a cool feature, it adds more information. Maybe that is what they thought, because they may be like tone deaf to what the web is and how people, you know, use it, because it's a two-way medium. There's writers and there's readers, okay? And, you know, hey, it may be nice for the reader to sort of like have more links, right? Because links are good. We like links. It's more information, right? Information's good. We like information. However, but for the writer, it's not so good. Why? Because I chose to link to that word and I chose not to link from that word. In other words, in the literature of the 21st century, which is electronic and, you know, HTML, you know, mostly HTML. There's some PDF in there. There's also some OPML. Hope there'll be a lot more OPML. You know, there's some straight text and whatever. But, hey, you know, it's mostly HTML these days. And HTML is like really, really, really big feature is linking. And so when you fart around with linking, you're sort of like in dangerous territory because you are changing content, okay? So the Microsoft people said, well, you know, our links have little squiggly lines and your links are straight lines. Uh-huh. And, you know, tell that to Mr. or Ms. Naive User. Oh, that link was put there by the guy who wrote the page, and that link was put there by somebody else. Okay, so you got two styles of linking. So what happens next here when they change their linking style to look just like my linking style, or change my linking style to look just like theirs? You know, it would be a user preference, of course. And why would they do it? Because, well, we did a little, like, you know, user research and found out that people thought it was confusing to have two different kinds of links. So now all of a sudden you can't tell the difference between one and the other. And you know, when what line did we cross there? You know, why, if it was okay for them to put a squiggly line, come on, what's the big deal? That made it a straight line. Now, there is a big deal because there's this thing called the First Amendment. And the First Amendment says I have the right to express myself. And I have a right to say what I want to say. And you don't have a right to change what I say. There's the commercial aspect of it as well. It's sort of like there are two things that are sort of violated here. One of them is my freedom of speech. And, you know, all right, people get kind of cynical about freedom of speech. You know, oh, you're always talking about your freedom of speech. Oh, your precious freedom of speech. You know, I watch out when people say shit like that, because that means they're going to be taking away your freedom of speech. And I'd be looking at the Second Amendment about that time, which says I have a right to bear arms. I think that's probably why they have the Second Amendment after the First. It's sort of to let you know that the First Amendment was pretty serious. I don't know, probably. I think Steve Gilmore is probably laughing right around this point. Steve told me that the last Morning Coffee Notes, like, really got him out of a funk and cheered him up. So that's probably why I'm doing this, because I like Steve. Anyway, hi, Steve. How you doing? So you, like, in this whole spectrum of messing with the content, you sort of look for the line, right? You say that, all right, where is the line that we're not going to let you cross? That when you cross that line, we're really going to start boycotting, and we're going to start running a campaign, you know, PR campaign to say, to, you know, alert. Because, you know, on this one, we got the allies. You know, when Smart Tags was out there, my chin dropped to the floor when I saw that that the New York Times ran an editorial saying, you know, Smart Tags, we don't think so. By that time, the New York Times felt apparently like they were like sort of so much on the web that the free speech issues of the web mattered to them. Just a few short years earlier, when the Communication Decency Act was out, they didn't apparently feel so much part of the web that they wanted to, like, say that the First Amendment applied to the Internet, which is why I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for them with their, you know, case about reporters deserving protection from revealing their sources. Not a constitutional right. And you know, it was the judge that had to ask the question, what about bloggers, and not the New York Times. So, you know, they still have a way to go before they understand that they're part of a larger world now. Which, by the way, I'll make a little note here, Peggy Noonan's piece, go to the archive for Scripting News, yesterday's archive. If you haven't read Peggy Noonan's piece, click on the link. It's in the Opinion Journal, the Wall Street Journal's website. It is so goddamn kick-ass. If you work as a professional reporter, read it. Read it. This is how you should be thinking about bloggers. We are not, like, reflective of you. We're doing something. And it isn't all about you. And, you know, this is the wake-up call, the sort of, you know, you wake somebody up in the middle of the night and they start screaming and they call you a salivating, moronic mob, you know, or shit like that. And, you know, all right, you just woke up. We'll forgive you for that one. But, you know, come on. Let's go. Cool thing about blogging and the professional reporters is that we're your bootstrap. We get you out of the mess that you're in, because to compete with us, you've got to tell us what you think. And you've got to stop this bullshit of accepting the spin of all the people that are running your show. You got to start getting out there and representing the interests of your readers. And in order to do that, you have to learn something about them. And by the way, a lot of us are your readers. So if you listen to bloggers, you're beginning to get a clue about what your readers want. Anyway, so back to Google and Microsoft Smart Tags and this whole issue. So basically, there's got to be a line in there somewhere. And something, you know, and I think that line has to be, you don't modify our content. You can change the way it looks if you want, okay, at user commands. In other words, you can change the font, you can change the size of the text. For accessibility, you can read it out loud. These are all very good things. And nobody, I mean, I'd love to hear arguments against them. I don't think anybody disputes that these are really good things, number one. Number two is they were all in the web when we started, for the most part. I mean, sure, there were some people that started before there were graphic browsers. Let's hear from them. You know, maybe that content shouldn't be subject to text size reshaping, you know. Maybe because they wrote that in the day when you couldn't do that, maybe their art is being screwed with because you can change it. But I'll tell you what, when I started writing for the web, their Mosaic had already existed, Netscape already existed, Microsoft's Internet Explorer didn't exist, Google certainly didn't exist, and I wrote all that content with the idea that I got to decide where the links were, and I'm sorry you didn't. And oh, I remember where I was. So there's two sides. There's the First Amendment side. So, like, you know what? Don't fuck with my writing. I'm sorry. You know, I'll opt in. Give me an opt in. This was actually something Microsoft did right that Google hasn't done, but Microsoft only did it half right. They didn't do it like right. They had a meta tag that you could put in a page that would turn off smart tags. So I put that in my content management system in my server and put it in every page I had. But you know what? I don't feel like I should have to like put something into my content system and in every page to turn off a feature that, you know, didn't exist when those pages were created. So it defaulted the wrong direction. And I was really angry about that. And like, you know, what's next? I mean, how long are we going to be running? See, that's always the question is, what's next? We let you have this one, then okay, the next thing is going to seem very small. All right, it's First Amendment, and then there's the commercial interest. And what's the rationale for that? Let's say you're Barnes & Noble, okay? I mean, and, you know, Barnes & Noble's a bookstore, and you know, you're reading a review of a book, and in the book, in that review, they happen to mention another book, and there's a little squiggly line underneath that name of that book, and you click on the link, and it takes you to Amazon, where you can buy the book. Well, you know, the Microsoft guy would say, isn't that great? You know, so easy to buy the book now. What could possibly be the problem? Well, you know, Barnes & Noble worked real hard to get people to come to that page so that they could buy something at Barnes & Noble, right? And you're going to take them to Amazon? Huh? I don't think so. See, that's the nasty part. Is like, you know, then there are always the guys that I think some of them are shills and some of them are AstroTurf. The guys on the, you know, discussion groups who are going to say, well, you know, come on, get over it. It's nice. It's a good feature. We like it. We're users. Haha. You know, we don't care about you and your products, or we certainly don't care about you and your free speech. And notice how none of those people say, oh, you know, I'm from like Europe where, you know, we don't care about American free speech. Yeah, it's Americans. Some people, you know, sound like Americans. You know, well, so anyway, I understand that Google didn't go as far as smart tags, number one. Number two, Google doesn't have dominant market share in browsers. But, you know, they have a lot of toolbar guys out there. And I remember having this conversation with Google before and getting blown off. You know, because shortly after they did the deal with Blogger, this is so bad what they did. they said, you know, we're not going to do anything to tilt the table in favor of Blogger. And then, like, weeks after they did the deal, there's the Blogger button in the toolbar. I don't know if it's still there. This is why I don't use the Google toolbar, and I never will. I hate to look at what they did there. It is so evil, so ugly, so unweb-like, so gross, so commercial, so fucked up. I mean, what they did was they put a button there that allows you to post on Blogger, right? Now, they could have made it work with all the blogging tools, and that would simply be a matter of using the APIs, the common APIs that work between all the blogging tools. There's just no damn excuse for not using the API. There's no damn excuse for binding that into their blogging tool, and it directly broke their promise, which is why you don't want to like go by any of their promises, because number one is they have a track record of breaking them, right? And they don't discuss it when they break it. They would not come to the phone to talk about this thing. They would not respond to emails. Instead, what happened was they started like doing the name calling thing, both privately and publicly, and it was like one of the worst chapters in the history of this development community that we've got here going around blogging. It could be that those people are gone now from Google, but the thing, that's the other thing to remember. And this happened with Netscape, and I knew it would happen, you know, because I've been in the software industry or around it for like, you know, almost, I hate to admit it, almost 30 years. But management changes, people get reorged, people leave the company, sometimes even the CEOs are fired, and they forget the promises they made. And at a board meeting, maybe somebody brings up, you know, we promised people we wouldn't do that, and you know, you get a polite little sort of snicker, and they go on and do it anyway, never mind the promise. So you know, we need to draw these lines, and we need to take care of them. We need to like watch very carefully, and then we need to not depend on promises. Okay, we need to just keep everybody in a good place. And I think the safest rule is, and I am going to talk with Google PR people, and I'm going to try to help them do the right thing. Basically, I'm not going to tell them, you know, we'll never work with you, because that's a bad idea. I mean, you never want to get to a place where you say, look, I'm sorry, I won't work with you, because you know, a company like Google, they're here to stay. By the way, I should mention I own 100 shares of Google, which I'm extremely happy about. I wish I owned more. I wish I owned a lot more. I bought them pretty much shortly after the IPO, and they've almost doubled in value, and, you know, kind of like that. And so when I say Google's here to stay, I have a very small financial interest in that actually turning out to be true. Anyway, so, you know what? I think that I've covered, I had a couple other things. I wanted to talk about, I want to talk about small town blogging, but I'm going to do that another time. You might want to listen to the last Morning Coffee Notes, actually, was this, session that Brian Russell recorded in Greensboro, North Carolina, Greensboro, North Carolina, or you might say Greensboro, North Kakalaki. Kakalaki. That's what they kind of call it. It's their affectionate term for Carolina. It's instead of Carolina, you say Kakalaki. Brian taught me that one, and we saw the stretch limo Hummer, and you know, I think it was Ruby who was saying, "Oh, they must be very rich, or they're very, or you know, they're getting out of that classy car and going into that dive." And I thought, "What? That's not a classy car. That's like," and then Brian says, "Yeah, it's Kakalaki white trash." Which is a term we don't use often enough in the North. Oh, I got to say one more thing. And you know what? I didn't dare put this on my blog, but I don't even know if I dare say it here. I think I better think about this some more. I'm going to button. This is a first, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is a first. Dave is actually going to zip it up. Not going to say it. But I'll leave you with a little puzzle. You know, what if you take the word blogger, and change two of the letters? What do you get in the? You'll never figure that. Maybe you'll figure it out. Blogger. Why is it that people treat bloggers like? I can't say it. If it's because I can't say it because I'm white trash. If I wasn't white trash, I could say it. But I can't, and I won't. So there you have it. It's a little puzzle. If you think you know the answer, send me the email, dave@scripting.com. And you've been listening to Morning Coffee Notes, a production of www.scripting.com. That's Scripting News. And if you want to subscribe, please do. It's www.scripting.com/rss.xml. I hope you all have a really great Friday. Have a great weekend, a great President's Day weekend. I'll catch up with you probably next time we talk. I'll be in Florida, and I'll be happy because I will be warm, and I'll be walking on the beach and breathing that ocean air and like one happy camper. So, I hope you're happy. Hope everything's going great for you, and we'll talk to you real soon, okay? Take care. Bye.